Greetings and welcome to Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, episode 51. Everything is bigger. We'll get to that. Joining me tonight, my special friends in a special new location in picturesque Prospect Heights, Brooklyn. And joining me, Stephen Van Patten. Joining me are...
Kirk Johnson.
Mark Abbott.
That's right.
And Rodan.
Rodan is coming later. We'll also get to that. Fellas, how are we doing?
We're good. We're doing good.
It's been a while. I kind of had to get the new dig situated.
It's beautiful.
It's nice.
Congratulations on your new digs.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes.
Yes.
All that comes with that.
Domestic
bliss.
Bliss, yes.
Right. Ain't
with that, good times. All right. So here we are. You guys can't see my Soundwave t-shirt. Look at that. All right. Okay. Well, now you saw it. So, fellas, let's just unpack all of the shenanigans. First thing, we might as well get Ant-Man and Wasp.
Talked about. Yeah.
The latest Marvel installment, starring Paul Rudd and...
Evangeline Lilly.
Evangeline Lilly.
Tyrell from The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Michael Peña. Right.
And Michael Peña, the great storyteller that he is.
Right. Wait, we got Wet Hot Summer, Lost, and who last thing Michael Peña was in before?
Oh, shit. Oh, my. Jesus.
Ant-Man.
Here's the thing. I think with the first Ant-Man movie, everybody was just sort of pleasantly surprised that movie was as good as it was and as much fun as it was. The franchise does not take itself very seriously, but at the same time provides a nice mix of thrills and fun and some suspense.
Yeah.
Little techno, little quantum, what I like to call loose science.
Very loose science.
I want to say indicative of the Marvel franchise in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a family film.
Right, because it's a family film, and we're also talking about a time, like a lot of these characters were conceived when we frankly didn't know what we know.
Yeah, right.
Which is why some people are still running around thinking that, you know, gamma radiation actually makes you stronger and doesn't give you cancer kill you within a matter of hours and things like that.
Right. But getting up and down, there's a Wakanda someplace in Africa.
Right.
Yeah.
But where you go? Nice hat.
Right.
Cargo shorts and boots.
It's probably a good thing there was no Wakanda because it'd be mighty crowded with a certain president. A lot of people would have just packed up and left.
They'd have a refugee situation because, you know, people just sitting outside of Wakanda going like this. They're going to let us in soon. They got to let us in. They're like almost like a K, like a full G out here of people sweating.
But interestingly enough, as much as everybody likes to talk about hot-ass Africa, they didn't seem hot.
Well, the funny thing is, it ain't that part of Africa.
Okay.
It's supposed to be the east side, highlands, so it's actually really cool at above sea level, so they don't have to deal with that humidity situation thing. And no jungles, it's all savanna and brush and plains, literally.
Thank you, Kirk. It's good to know that somebody was listening to Dick Gregory back in the day.
I'm just saying, I'm probably one of the few people in America who realize that, you know, there are actually three countries in North America.
Getting back to the movie.
So Ant-Man and Wasp.
Yes, Ant-Man and Wasp. Lots of fun. Lawrence Fishburne, nice surprise.
Yes, it's nice.
Very great surprise.
As Goliath, no less.
Right. As Ben Foster.
Yes.
As Ben Foster.
Formerly known as Goliath.
Yeah.
Formerly. But even more formally, Black Goliath.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I wouldn't mind seeing like clips of that in the flashbacks they're doing, right?
Right. Right.
Flashbacks would be nice. Fishburne couldn't play. I don't know if they had Fishburne. That's a little too much there, CGI.
Gotta get somebody to stretch out that suit.
Yeah, because that Matrix money has been keeping him in the restaurant.
You know, you see.
Matrix money, yeah. Matrix money got him big. Blackish got him solid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Blackish.
And, you know, I loved the comedic timing in this film was just extraordinary. Because even there's that one sequence when they did the truth serum. And the ghost appears and scares everybody in the room. And I was just like, you know what, you guys, the truth serum thing was hysterical in and of its own.
Uh-huh.
Particularly the fact that he's having an argument with the guy who's giving it to him.
Right, exactly.
That's like, there's no such thing as truth serum.
It's true serum.
And then Michael Pena.
Which we should spoil it. You know, if you didn't
it's
know
been already. A month now.
Just in case.
I know. Spoiler alert. Yeah. So.
Jobs.
Oh. Michael Pena's always funny narration.
Yes, which is,
and they picked the perfect time in that film to do that because that's one of those jokes that could get old very fast,
mm-hmm.
and they figured out a perfect way to put that to
a great
to put that in
to,
there.
To say, you know what, that's gonna be great for it.
So Michelle Pfeiffer playing
another nice surprise,
playing the mom.
Another nice surprise.
Very nice.
And
what do you think of the quantum realm?
Interesting.
Yeah.
That was very
sweet.
Interesting. And the fact that how much time she'd been in there.
Right.
Is without food or water.
Right.
Or
should say something about time and space.
Yeah, it doesn't
respond differently
they respond differently there. What I will say is we had a discussion about the ending of Infinity War.
Yes.
My prediction was semi-true. Because I had originally predicted that, and this is a spoiler, I had predicted that they would rescue the mother and then she would disappear.
Oh.
Because of Thanos.
Yeah.
They just went all out and got rid of the whole crew and left him floating around in there. So...
in a little germ mobile.
Yeah. So that it's going to be interesting to see how he gets out.
Right. I found that realm interesting. You know, it reminded me of the Marmon. When Strange went to battle the Marmon, and you had that strange kind of light and the multicolored terrain and craziness.
Right.
That's what the quantum realm reminded me of.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking flashbacks like, wow, you're actually not. It's not even like a microcosm world. It's another dimension altogether.
Great. Now you just answered my question.
It's another dimension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
On that note, though, you almost have to give the credit to you have to give the actors. I want to say a little more credit than normal because, like, we have the benefit of seeing all of this in the theater
right.
mm-hmm.
when they're actually shooting this.
You have to act like yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
There's
all of
that going on, you know, I was like facial expressions and right eye lines and no, the monster's
over here
and,
right,
you know,
there,
and
yeah.
all that shit. So
I
would imagine that's not easy.
You know what it reminded me a little bit? I wonder if like they made him sit down and watch this. You remember the old Spider-Man and Ralph Bakshi did some episodes where it was like he'd have that background where it was like technicolor splashes of
right.
That's what it reminded me of.
wait, which old Spider-Man? The cartoon?
The cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Jazz Spider-Man.
Yeah, the one
and,
song.
And Ralph Bakshi actually directed a couple of those episodes that were really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had one weird alien wizard dude with one eye talking about, you know, destroying this one planet of barbarians. And the dude went off and out of space. It's a whole crazy thing. But I imagine, you know, you sit there and you watch that and you're like this. Okay, that's how I'm going to act, because that's what I'm going to be saying. That's exactly, because I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at, like, Ralph Bakshi, high off of something.
Mm-hmm.
High off of maybe a bag or something. And I was going to play it wild.
See, it's funny, when you said old school Spider-Man for a minute, I thought you meant the old school live action. Which
the
music
Electric Company?
No, not the Electric Company. You could have meant that too. I mean, you could have meant that too. But what I meant was the one with the dude, Nicholas.
Yeah, I remember.
Nicholas Hammond? And he would do this.
Yes!
And the net would be some production assistant would just throw a net somewhere.
Yo, man, yeah, he had the, you know, he had that 70s show, haircut. Like, it wasn't an afro, it was like a mop.
They would do that on the electric company. The
yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the dude is in, like, rope.
Yep. And he had like a grill instead of eyes. It was like
Spider-Man.
Actually, back to Ant-Man. You know what I really appreciate at the very beginning when he had that moment with his daughter. And I really
when he built the ant maze.
Yeah, and yeah, I really, that was really touched me actually when I saw that. And I do like how they kept with his motivation. Like his real motivation was, I need to get back home so I can. You know, like, look, for the rest of my time,
they're gonna come after me,
right?
They
so I can
put
be
it
with
on
my
the
daughter,
ant.
Right?
That's
so
what was
right, so I can be with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that that was like his first and primary motivation.
Well, one of the things I loved was that sequence with Goliath when she was like, "I'm gonna go get the child." He's like,
yeah,
"You go after his daughter. Mm-hmm. I'm not helping you." Like that,
yeah.
like there's that boundary where, you know, because that's usually what a villain would do. You know, I'm gonna go in. Well, that's what Yellow Jacket did, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going, I'm going to grab your family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's that, you know, we don't cross that line to do
that. We're bad guys. We're running out of those bad guys.
Right. Which is interesting enough, I'm beginning to notice since Black Panther, mm-hmm. we're having a lot of villains who aren't necessarily villains.
Yeah.
Well, I've noticed that Killmonger, is she called the Ghost? What is she called?
Ghost.
Yeah.
And it's a guy in the
con. and even in Bushmaster.
Bushmaster.
Right. Bushmaster
right. on Luke Cage.
And I want to say maybe we should go all the way back to Homecoming.
Yes.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
Because the Vulture was, you know, there's a point where you're looking at him and you're like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I actually do hope that he gets away with all that shit.
They screwed him. Like,
yeah.
I would have been mad, too.
Right.
Especially the fact he shoots one of his own men, and he was like, wait, what gun is this? And he was like, I didn't mean to, like, disintegrate the guy. I meant to just...
Right. That's the wrong one. He's like,
all right.
Well, I'll take it even further back. I want to say Dracula Untold.
Oh!
Makes you sympathize
with Dracula.
The Count
quite
a bit.
Right, mm-hmm. Which always made him as the noble villain, for lack of a better term, right? Because it's not like he...
Not necessarily. Definitely classy villain.
Actually, you know what? The Dracula Untold storyline was more along the lines of him being a tragic hero as opposed to a tragic villain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the villains were all the Turks and the original vampire that lived in the cave.
Right.
And Dracula,
Dracula's name.
Mm-hmm.
He was more like the tragic hero because he did these things.
Yeah, that's definitely how they presented
it. They presented more like the tragic hero, which still doesn't negate what you're saying. Actually.
Right.
You see where it begins to sort of evolve.
Right. Well, the thing that I feel I noticed is that lately we've pretty much put all of our villains in a quasi-sympathetic
mm-hmm.
kind of mode, even as far as Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, Darth Vader, when we first meet Darth Vader in the 70s, he is this ironclad, black-garbed, cyborg monstrosity that you have no sympathy for whatsoever.
He killed Ben.
However, then you introduce the prequels, which, you know, problematic to say the least,
mm-hmm.
but the one thing that they do is they turn it around and make you, you know, or at least attempt to make you feel a certain kind of way about it.
Yeah.
I want to say...
Empathize with
him. Right. And I want to say another example, Hannibal Rising,
mm-hmm.
if you saw it. Hannibal
Lecter. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Where they basically go back to Hannibal's youth and put him in World War II, subject him to all this horrible shit, this business with his little sister, and basically... You know, by the end of that movie, you're like, oh, that's why he's fucked up. You know, I want to say that it's a trend that started. I don't know if it necessarily started with Darth Vader, but it definitely started a few years ago. And now it's like, it's gotten to the point where, you know, and I'll tell you what, it kind of bothers me to some degree, because then, you know, the narrative there is then no one's accountable for their actions.
Right. Oh, okay. Or maybe they are still accountable, but we understand where it's coming from.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Thanos?
Right.
I mean, he's accountable. And the thing is, he owns that shit.
That's
one thing about Thanos. He actually owns it.
Which I guess, in a sense, you can't be mad. Because it's I mean...
It's more like a cautionary tale.
I put it this way.
Villains become a cautionary tale.
When you say that, I think about what he said about Vader. And I think the moment... I remember the moment I became sympathetic with him was when he and Luke were standing on that platform in Return of the Jedi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he says to him, you know, you don't understand the power of the dark side. I have to obey my master. And Luke says to him, and this is great, great body acting, because you can't see his face. When Luke says, then my father is truly dead. And then you just get that one moment with Vader just kind of staring out into whatever, just sort of, and I guess in a way you could kind of see through that mask that this man now is suddenly conflicted. Because the other part of this story is that you were told your kids died. So the whole time, although we have prequels, unfortunately, I would have thought Vader... If we did it again this time, Vader would turn to the Emperor and like, motherfucker, you told me my kids were dead. You told Patty, you know, it's like, now I got a reason to chuck you over the side of this railing because, you know, you lied. But that also feeds into the point you're making about being sympathetic to the villain. And I think now we seem to not want to villainize or make the villain mean. It's like, because I think
it's mean or understandable.
But I mean, but the thing is that everybody gets into some situation where they may take the tragic road because that might be the most. But then you have things like the Warriors when they get back to Coney Island and he asks him, why did you shoot Cyrus? And the guy's like, no reason.
I just like doing things like that.
And that kind of breaks the thing. Like, damn, you just cold. It's like you didn't. It wasn't that. Oh, I shot him because I didn't believe in his vision.
Right.
It was like I shot him because I felt like doing it.
Right.
And how do you answer to that? It's like, well, the only recourse you have now is to kill him, or even the Joker in the Dark Knight.
Right.
Because at some point I started to wonder if Batman was going to have to kill him. If he was going to stop it,
should have just killed him.
Well, what did he say? I can't kill you. Can't kill me because of your code, and I can't kill you because you're just
too much fun.
You know what? Loving Ghost and the Foster and Goggins, who plays the gangster,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's only out for the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Southern
Goggins is great.
I'd like to revisit the whole villain thing, actually.
Yeah.
Because I keep thinking about Hela.
Hel?
Hela.
Oh, Hela.
And I like
Hela.
On Thor Ragnarok, because there's something else there that, you know, that I think nobody really wants to pay attention to think about, is the fact that, you know, Odin created that monster. And it's not like she was upset of being the monster.
Mm-hmm.
She embraced it.
Yeah, she embraced it. She's upset that you act like I ain't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like you ain't make me. Like all this shit you got was not got by me and you going buck wild on planets.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I excuse me for going there, guys, but it's kind of like, you know, when we talk about America, we want to look out at the Grand Canyon, see how beautiful it looks and shit. And nobody wants to talk about. Yeah, nobody wants to talk about, you know, how many miles up north you got, you know, the Trail of Tears,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, the last march of the Nez Perez trying to get into Canada. you know, the destruction of the Native Americans, the entire peoples. Mm-hmm. You don't want to talk about that. You want to act like, you know, we got this because we're just good people. Nah, you got that because you was fucked up.
But then, you know...
And that's how Odin... and you have to think about, you know, that's Asgard. Mm-hmm. Asgard's a beautiful, enlightened place. Because y'all are fucked up.
But yeah, I mean, you know what? You know what? I could see the same argument being made about Rogue One.
Yeah.
Because as many years as we spent with the original Star Wars villainizing Vader...
Yeah.
The soldiers in Rogue One... though the mission was, you know, to save the Alliance, they were thugs.
Yeah.
You know, and so the fact that Vader, what Vader does in the end is like, well, that was coming because.
This is the thing. I don't want to spend time on it, but it's kind of like they know that though. The Alliance knows that we're employing the, you know, pretty much the ne'er-do-wells and the morally ambiguous. We know we're employing them to do this thing. If they know they're doing this thing. And it was pretty much presented by the writers it's a way how it's presented, for lack of a better
word, right?
And when you have a movie where it presents, you know, we're fucked up, we've done some really fucked up things, but we're doing this other thing now for a better cause. Mm-hmm. As opposed to not seeing that part at all. Like people are arguing still that Han Solo shot first or not. That should never be an argument. You feel what I'm saying?
Well, not if you own a DVD.
Not if you own a DVD, but that still should never even be brought up as an argument.
No.
He shot first, which means he's that kind of fucked up kind of guy.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to admit that part. When Solo came out,
look,
you know,
to be
I would
honest,
like to see something more of Solo being...
I don't think less of Han Solo.
You don't.
For shooting Greedo.
Right.
Because he knew Greedo was about to fuck his shit up.
Right. I totally understand. But the point still is, it's still that idea of the good guy. Like, we don't shoot first. We let the other guy shoot first and miss us, and then we shoot, like, in response. We react instead of act.
Right.
Right? Because the bad guys have to react first for us to. Mm-hmm. For deadly force to be used, we have to feel threat.
You have to be justified.
You have to be justified. So
that
would mean also, and you see it in all the Westerns, even in the Westerns, when they're doing it, the bad guy will always pull out first, and then the good guy shoots.
Pow!
And the good guy just happens to just pull out just a second after him, but pull the trigger quick. That's some bullshit. You know, but you see what I'm saying, though?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like knowing, having the characters know that they are who they are. And I guess I was watching... it's a very old movie. Alec Guinness, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and Smiley's People.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching it. And the thing is that always struck me about those stories is that our hero, George Smiley, you're never given the idea that he knows he's the good guy. They know they're doing it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They employ some nasty, treacherous, slimy individuals to do something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's never, you know, and it always almost comes off as cynicism. Mm-hmm. But you never get the idea that he's like Odin. Like, you're doing this for the good. Like, no, motherfucker, you're doing it to keep that shit that you stole in the first place.
But that's like the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
You get the worst of the worst.
Do the job.
But when we tell that story from their point of view, they're not the villains in this. I mean, it's war, so it's
they're not the villains in the act, but they know they
but,
are.
But they are. But they know. Yeah.
Like
but
one
I mean,
guy, like Telly Savalas.
I'll do you one better because you said about the hero always shooting first. Think about Predator.
Yeah.
And the whole fact that the reason why he's hunting these people, like these are some horrible people. Like these mercs and everything, what they're doing, that you rolled up into a camp, you shot up a bunch of people, yada yada. And the only reason why you mad is because the guy that pushes the pencils now, that was your boy, suckered you into coming down.
Right.
But meanwhile, up in the tree.
But wait.
Wait.
In all fairness, we're a rescue team. not assassins.
Right.
Right. That's why
we that's the difference.
That's why we kill everybody.
That's the difference.
Instead of sneaking in at night and just snatching people out and running out. But I see
snatch your wig. Y'all snatching wigs. Who you say? Who you say?
But at the same time, up in the tree is the cat that's been watching all this. Like, oh, this is gonna be fun because this is what y'all like to do. Me too. Just okay. I just collect trophies.
We should go back to that, man. I like the ghost character. I do like.
I do too.
Because she knows that she was created to be this thing.
Mm-hmm.
She asked for help, and they made her into something else. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she ever really had a conflict with the idea that I did some fucked up things. I just want to get better.
I want to be healed.
I just want the pain to stop.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, to be honest, to me, she's not the actual villain.
No.
The villain of the movie is the gunman.
The gunman.
Which we're starting to get used to
right.
in real life these days.
Right. But the FBI? How can such a silly man be a bad this silly FBI guy. We're going back up. How many times he went up in that people's houses?
My favorite was, I'm going to see you around. What do you mean? Like you want to go out for dinner or something? Like, no. I mean, like, I'm going to see you. I mean, unless you want to go to dinner. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, that was some of the most awkward man crush I've seen.
That's how you say goodbye to a man.
I mean, outside an interview with a vampire, that's some of the most awkward man crush shit I've ever seen. It was like, okay, like, wow.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It's a very likable movie. Again, it's Marvel has a winning formula.
Yes.
And they're going to
keep going. And I think they're tweaking it well. They're doing a good job.
Yes.
So that it doesn't feel like, we know it's a formula, but it doesn't feel like the same old formula.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah.
Now.
And I didn't think I was going to like it either.
Oh.
I didn't think I was going to like that.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, maybe it's time to start admitting that you're going to go into these movies and at least halfway enjoy the fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yeah.
You know, they're just that good at this now. So, something that's not quite following the cinematic formula is the Netflix stuff.
Yeah.
And that is what you call a segue, kids. So, Luke Cage.
Yes.
I imagine everybody's done their nice due diligence binge on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pretty much, you know, that was one of those things where I had a Saturday where I had shit to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then that went away. It's just funny because unlike when it happened to me, the first time I ever like lost a day on a binge and didn't realize what I was doing, it was honestly Orange is the New Black.
Mm. Really?
The first season of Orange is the New Black, I remember waking up in the other apartment, of course, about 10-ish, brushed my teeth, had a little breakfast. What's this Orange is the New Black shit? Click. Yeah, I'm still watching. Yeah, I better go do this thing soon. Click. And then, oh shit, it's dark outside. Fuck, I was supposed to call. I was supposed to email. I was supposed to, oh shit, these people called?
I did that with House of Cards.
Yeah, that's another one.
Jesus.
Now it happens and I just accept it.
Yeah, right. Like, that's your fate.
Oh, this is on now? Yeah, this shit can wait. You just start text messaging people, yeah, I'm going to be late. Hey, can we do this tomorrow? I know I said I was going to do this thing. Hey, I'm actually not feeling so good.
Right.
You know.
Busy.
But, yeah.
Busy.
I can't today.
Omar!
Busy. I'm busy, all right.
Yo, Mark, you ready?
So, Luke Cage, second season.
Mm-hmm.
Nice surprises. Misty gets an arm. Iron Fist is relegated to one episode. Yes.
But I liked Iron Fist in this stuff.
I did, too.
I didn't mind him.
I did, too. I didn't mind him. What short, was that? Apparently, short doses, he's okay. Yes.
Yeah, short doses, yeah.
That patty cake.
Yeah, and him just messing with him like, you know, you got to at least putting him in a place where you do. You got to at least train a little bit on you. You know, just because you're super strong, don't mean you shouldn't be training to have a punch.
Somebody, no, you know what? I'm thoroughly convinced that this, after seeing him in this, one or two things needs to happen. Either he needs to start taking actual martial arts classes, or they need to get him a martial arts choreographer who can train him. Because as an actor, he's fine, but his choreography is just like, it worked for this because Luke is not doing martial arts, so it's easy for him to play off of him. But watching him, I'm like, dude, you're not fluid in none of your motions. It's like, it's almost like when you move, you're waiting for the stunt guy across from you to make his move so that you make sure that it looks clean. But you know, I enjoyed the fight, but it was just like, pick up the pace a little bit.
You know what the sad thing is? Like don't watch The One Jet Li, and then watch Iron Fist afterwards, because then you'd be really like,
I'm nobody's bitch.
Disappointed.
Right, you'd be like this. Nobody even saw that movie. And it's still better than that.
I am nobody's bitch.
Real quick, I'm getting really tired of them not being a part of the cinematic universe. Like, I had like a moment in my head, bad scenario in my head where it's like Kevin Feige is like, okay, we have the cinematic universe set up. All right, now we're going to talk to TV version on Netflix. All right, you know, Ben, Alan, I want you guys to take care of it. And Sarah's like, what, Sarah? You can't have Ben and Alan work together on this. So why not? Well, Ben's taking care of Alan's baby. And henceforth, you never get the connections. Ben and Alan don't want to work with each other. That's the MCU in the TV version. Because at the end of Luke Cage, I was expecting to see some motherfuckers disappear. You feel me? At least at the end, have the TV screen with a giant donut in the, you know, in the middle of Midtown shooting in the outer space. Some acknowledgement, because that's a big deal.
Because they do acknowledge the universe in passing.
They acknowledge the universe with the Hulk and Big
Man. They talk about the incident.
Yeah, but you know, kind of like.
So then I guess the question does raise.
What's the timing?
Is where the timeline is with the Netflix version.
Right.
Maybe they're waiting for them to become more solid as the Defenders. And then introduce the fact that they're on that timeline.
That would be nuts if 2 years from now, these Netflix seasons get to a point, then all of a sudden they're all sitting around eating shawarma, and then motherfuckers start disappearing. That would be kind of bananas. I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Exactly, because the shit is 2019. They're talking about, you know, coming back. Between 2019, you got what? Iron Fist coming back again for part two or something?
Yeah. I guess.
And so then it's like...
Look, in this sense, I just got to quote Sugar. That's some petty shit.
Sugar.
All right.
Sugar and Turk.
Let's talk about some of these characters. First, let's talk about Bushmaster.
I gotta give it up.
Bushmaster.
You say I can't come in your yard?
What was interesting, first of all, a lot of locations very close to where we are now.
Yeah, right around
the restaurant in particular. You know, a lot of that brought a little smile to my face, I gotta admit. I just wish I knew, but I was probably working while he was shooting, so it was like I could just stumble in and be like, what's going on in here?
You probably could have actually got to think about it. You're like, yeah, you know, I can do something here.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a resume.
I just want to beef fatty some Bushmaster. I'm sorry, yes, go ahead.
They should actually change the name of that restaurant.
Yeah, Bushmasters.
The Bushmasters. Get your cocoa bread.
A bunch of people got shot up in there, so. But yeah, as you were saying, Bushmaster.
That's
Brooklyn.
That's nice.
Gentrifiers beware.
That's Brooklyn.
That's right.
That was live. Mariah, you're waiting for Mariah to actually do some real low down shit.
Alfre Woodard as a villain.
Wow.
She came out with that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And mocking Wataguan.
Yeah, that was...
What?
I knew she had it in her.
You know... You know what?
Jay's a double take.
There's a thing that got me, though. Because I never really... First of all, I never really connected with Bushmaster as the quote-unquote villain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what got me... I had one of those Scarface moments where I just didn't like anybody. And the fact that we go back to this incident where her grandmother burned the house down in Jamaica, killing like his... And I'm like, you know what? None of y'all are worth it. You know, I'm like, I'm sick of the both of y'all at this point. Mm-hmm. I can't even feel sympathy. I couldn't feel sympathy for him. Because
really,
because he worked at he was a hardworking young man.
No,
serving drinks.
Because the thing was
at hotel.
Because here's the thing
to Mariah.
The thing was that was some shit that didn't necessarily involve. In a way, it didn't necessarily involve him.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of he got caught in that because they were trying to seek revenge. It was like he got caught in the crossfire.
That's his birthright.
But what happens in New York, you in the damn. What happens in New York, it's like, don't suck your teeth. Because that got on my nerves. Everybody in that.
Y'all burned out my house in my yard.
Yeah.
I can't come to your yard.
Yeah. Half of that cast has some pretty clean teeth.
Yeah, right.
You got to think.
I
mean,
that's a chick stick right there.
I guess I wanted Mariah to get what was coming to her.
Yeah.
Because
sure.
It just got to the point where I was like, you just, we've been playing this
but
game.
But from her own daughter.
That I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
No,
but the fact that he blindsides... He punched him while he was walking.
Oh, right.
I'm like, yo, what kind of shit?
Wait, and did a backflip?
Yeah.
Like capoeira shit.
And then I'm like,
oh, you got Jamaican.
And I love the fact that even in this state,
what's that character in Street Fighter? That does
There is a character in Street Fighter. Like,
totally does that. I forget the name.
In Street Fighter, there's a character. He has dreads and he has warmer pants.
Oh, I know
what
you're talking about.
Yeah. He does a capoeira that shit.
But not once, but twice. Like, is that,
yeah.
So I love that dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah.
And what I also love is the fact that despite the fact that he gets knocked out, not one single person in his neighborhood tried to help.
That's Harlem, man.
That's like the superhero gets... Like, I say that because when you think about... Remember in Spider-Man 2, when he stopped the train, and the people on the train were passing back, and Doc Ock came on there, and he was like, if you want to get to him, you got to go through us.
Right.
And then he just moves everybody. But literally, everybody's there with a cell phone. Watching the fight,
on, bro. You know,
world star.
I say this.
That's the difference between Midtown and Uptown.
I say Uptown. We got that honor thing going. It's like 1D is 1D. That's what that shit means. If you start jumping in, then everything else starts going crazy. You violated the 1D. You know the 1D rule. That means motherfuckers start putting out knives and
bats. It's called a fair one.
It's all a fair one. Exactly.
It's called a fair one.
One and one. Luke got done. And they had to. Those are some good fights. Those are actually
their fights were.
Those fights were good.
I loved
absolutely.
That fight up on the bridge.
The bridge, right? What bridge was that?
That's the Alexander Hamilton.
Okay.
Up there.
Oh, all right.
That's the one that crosses over from Manhattan to the Bronx.
The Bronx.
So
those are nice. There was some good. Wow. Yeah. I did enjoy it.
We
good
got
fight
to. We got to talk about the music.
Primo.
The music.
Primo.
Oh, yes.
Primo.
Wow, that soundtrack.
And the guests.
Yes.
And the club.
What? Wait, Rakim.
Rakim.
Dude.
Yo.
You got Rakim up in here.
Rakim, Allah, and KRS-One.
And I like that the cast, and characters knew them.
I shot down one, I shot down two. Now tell me what the fuck am I supposed to do?
I was like, oh my god. Wow.
Ghostface killer.
Oh yeah, and that little, whenever you start shooting, he started running too. He jumped off the stage. I know what this is about.
I actually,
even Jadakiss and Faith Evans with their Biggie tribute. That was nice.
Yes, you're right.
That was really nice.
But you know, I have to say I had an especially special connection to this season. Because not only did they shoot around the corner, but the scenes in the movie theater where he was hiding, that's where my wife was from, in Queens, in Sunnyside.
There we go.
Okay.
Because I know that it's gone now, but I remember that theater, and I was like, wow, that is, that dude was that funny. Dude.
Oh,
trying to save him.
What else have seen him in? He looks like the son from, I want to say, one of you was in My Wife and Kids, the Dane Wayans comedy for a minute. Because I've seen his face before when he was younger, and now he's older and he's actually really funny and stuff.
Right, right.
Oh, we got to give a shout out to Kathy, the father.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I forgot he passed away.
He passed away, yeah.
Yeah.
And he still delivered. Because he did look, he looked sick.
That dirty
show.
Knee.
Yeah.
He
looked
kind of sick, but, you know, he still delivered.
Old Dirty D. And I mentioned this to Kurt a while back. I love at the end when he took the Biggie painting down and put up the Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
That was very poignant. What's that?
I thought it was a good response to the question.
We might be. I'm actually having problems seeing it over here.
Yeah.
I'll run over and read it in a second. So what do you think that... Because obviously that's a statement, but what is the statement?
Oh, wow. We
talked about this.
We talked about
the statement.
More like I think we came to an idea that it was changing from the idea of being a monarch, a boss, to a protector. To a liberator. Because it's Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we always talk about him being the greatest of all time. And you always think about him being greatest of all time. It had nothing to do with him being, quote unquote, a boss. But just like, I can't remember that, the foil. You know, she yells out, says, you're doing wrong. Right? Letting you know when you got to get checked.
Yeah.
But not the boss.
You
know, he's not the boss. He just does the checking.
All right. All right.
So you're like checking the system. Checking the system of how Harlem. Harlem will be the boss. Harlem needs to get checked sometimes. Let them flow how they're going to flow. But you need somebody to really police them because the police ain't doing
their job. And you know what the interesting dynamic about that is that the person that didn't want the club is salty that she didn't get it.
That, I wonder if that's a problem in the writing, I think. You never got the idea that she wanted the club.
But you know what? I think in hindsight, when I look back at it, I think where she's salty was that she didn't get a chance to turn it down because her mother didn't leave it to her. She left it to him.
Right.
So it was like one of those things where you go and Kirk, I'm leaving. Look, I don't want anything. I don't want anything from this brother. That's all right, because he didn't leave you anything. Wait, what?
Right, the hell you mean he didn't leave you anything? Right.
The hell, he gonna die and not leave me something? You know?
Spent like 7 hours in front of the mirror. I don't want that place.
Right?
I don't want that place.
I
ain't trying to get that place. That place is cursed. I don't want that. And then you sit down and rave with, oh, I'm sure these motherfuckers.
Gotta get that neck roll, right?
Right, hold on.
Like, Kirk, I don't want, you're not getting anything. I practiced for 7 hours to say that. So the simple fact that she kind of meandered in there and is just kind of is interesting.
Well, I think you guys are right. It's definitely a move towards changing the mood, changing the narrative.
Right.
Biggie, you know, and no disrespect, you know, to him and his legacy as a hip-hop artist, you know, he perpetuated the crime rhyme.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
Which, ultimately, you know, while it's cool to bob your head and whatever, at the end of the day, the crime rhyme, it has nothing to do.
It kind
of
glorifies the situation.
Right. It glorifies the situation. Yeah. Has nothing to do with doing the right thing.
Right.
So if I'm specifically switching out a big old Biggie poster for a picture of Ali, then I think what I'm trying to say is things are going to be a little more on the up and up.
Right.
Wasn't there also a Basquiat painting that had
that was the fight. Yeah. That was the conflict.
Okay, because, before she changed
it. And then she changed it
back to
that, and if you think about the transition of it, because you have the two warring factions, and then Biggie represents the fact that now only one of us survived that fight, and now we're crowning...
It's a consolidation of power.
A power, and then, we can't have this. We need to change this.
Change the paradigm, yes.
Because even in the end, he gets kicked out of the... out of the barbershop.
Yes,
because the brother's like, you know,
at that point, because he can't be.
He's like, I can't have you. This is supposed to be a safe space.
What's your favorite quote from Boardwalk Empire?
Oh, you can't be half a gangster.
Right.
Hey, Nucky, you can't be half a gangster. So.
Right. That was sad though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, really, you have to. The arbitrator, everybody respects him. But do you respect Luke Cage or do you fear Luke Cage?
I think it's more fear. It's more fear because, you know.
Well, it depends on who you are. I mean.
I think what tempted also is him having to go do that sit down with the mafia. Which kind of like, instead of having her come to the safe space.
Yeah, how about that? And how about that casting? Annabella Jungle Fever Sciorra.
Mm-hmm. I ain't seen her in a while, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
You look very nice. Wife and nice.
Nice and cougarish.
She's cougarish. Rawr, rawr. Right. Can I get you a mimosa?
Well, you heard the little conversation.
Yeah, the coffee. Like, she bought a coffee.
No, I've never...
I don't
like espresso. No one's made you a proper cup.
Yes.
Hello?
I did, because you know my favorite was the old lady. Mm-hmm. She was like, you want to come on in for some coffee?
Yes.
And he was like, no.
Hey, and did you catch the beautiful thing that she brought us? Like, I know a place, Cafe Rich. Talk about Cafe Reggio.
Mm-hmm.
Come for the espresso. It's like, oh shit, a Shaft reference. Oh, shit.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about Misty? Take your bag. You ain't coming to my house.
Yes. She's awesome. Yeah.
You know what that made me think of?
What?
What was it?
Several ex-girlfriends. No.
No.
Jay in James Bond's, was it Skyfall? No, it wasn't Skyfall. Yeah,
No, it was Skyfall.
Where he shows up at M's house.
Oh yes.
After months of being on the lam, and he goes, I tried to get back into my apartment. She goes, well, we got rid of it after, you know, once we thought you were dead.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I'm going to need some money for someplace to go. She goes, you're right, because you're not staying
here. Yeah.
You're pretty well off because you're not staying in my place.
Wow.
Oh, and so I guess this would be a good segue. Cloak and Dagger.
All right.
When we talk about the Marvel Universe in and of itself.
Yeah.
Nobody
disappeared in that, did it?
Yeah. No. But what's interesting in this one, there is... So the dynamic that they went with this, it takes place in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a lot of voodoo surrounding Cloak. And the fact that his family, his father in particular, is one of the
Red Hawks.
It's the Indians that are in the Mardi Gras.
Okay.
Treme.
Yeah, Treme. Okay. Mardi Gras Indians.
Yes.
Okay.
And the fact that his cloak is the one his brother started making before he died.
Really?
There is a cop that he's trying to bring down who killed his brother.
Yeah.
and he befriends this female cop that's on the force. There's a scene in there where she takes a good friend of hers with her, and he starts doing the whole cloak thing. So the guy's like, oh, man, I have never seen anything like that. Have you? She goes, I used to work in New York. Remind me to tell you about my friend Misty sometime. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh,
I'm like,
I got up to that. That was deep.
Like, I was nice. Like, so now I'm like, wow, what the devil else does Misty do that that she's like, I've seen this before. Because she's like, I've seen this before. Remind me to tell you about my friend Misty sometime. I'm like, shoot.
I have a question. What's the female cop's name?
I'd have to look it up.
It's not Monica Rambeau, though.
Hmm?
It's not Monica Rambeau.
I'll look it up. You mean the character's
name? That would be
name?
Crazy, but no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You mean the character's name?
The character's name. That would I'll be take you. You know, you see what
that
I'm
would
saying?
That would totally be wild.
What's your take on the show?
I like it. I don't love it.
Is it Fox or is it a...
No, it's on Freeform.
It's Freeform.
Oh.
Which I guess used to be ABC Family.
Yeah.
So that's so that's a, you know, that's a wing spread.
Although they do have a lot of language on that show.
The teenage angst thing, that side of it, the kids, I mean, they would need superheroes the way they talking to their parents. son.
Yeah, especially the brother.
It's, okay. Are you fucking kidding me?
He got limped.
Crazy limp. Crazy lip,
you know,
and his mom,
like,
and the moms is being played by Gloria Rubin.
Yeah,
who?
Gloria Rubin.
Gloria Rubin. You know who Gloria Rubin is?
And
she just like Gloria Rubin. So,
Gloria Rubin.
And she's our age, and maybe a hair older. You know, she was around when kids used to get popped in the mouth. Again, it's ABC Family. I get it.
Right, but still.
But, Yo.
They.
Hello? Yeah, like, my son, he got the lip. Yeah, he come, go on. Yeah, go on. He come, I have nightshade if you're looking.
You're a Bushmaster, come on the set.
So talking back to your mom.
Remember her just disappearing from your house.
Yeah, that's right. I come into your yard.
But that'd actually be a tough fight for Bushmaster, because Dude
yeah,
can just kind of like phase in and out. He kind of pulls the Nightcrawler thing.
Oh.
But what? But
special effects.
But yeah.
No, the special effects, that's pretty tight.
Because but the other dynamic about the two of them is that she can see the good in people when
Hopes.
She touches them.
The blonder.
Yes. And
Hopes.
He sees, Sander. He sees,
hope.
And Cloak
she sees
the darkness.
The fears.
So it's interesting when they decide to come together, what she ends up seeing about her own past, which is interesting that she repressed, that she didn't, I guess she didn't realize she repressed it about a memory about her father.
Wait, but that was that her memory or was that her mother's memory?
That was her mother's memory.
Okay.
But it was the two of them.
But
that,
the two of them brought it up.
They were there together. So,
it's an interesting, for me, it's the fact that their powers are heightened by the presence of the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like somebody's trying to do a very not so subtle analogy on why black and white folks should come together.
Mm. Oh.
And maybe I'm reading more into it than I should, but that's what I'm getting. To be honest, because there's a lot, I mean, and to the show's credit, there is a lot of addressing of the plight of young black men in this country.
Yeah.
He actually goes on, in one episode in particular, he goes on for about a good 2 minutes when she starts more or less pulling the privilege card.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he all the way checks her.
Yeah.
He checked her any harder, he'd have been D.L. Hughley. So, you know, it was and stuff's falling, and you know, so that was one thing I noticed, and I didn't really feel it was very subtle.
Right. Okay. No, no, subtlety is not this show's.
Oh, no.
No. They deal with the fact that his brother was killed by a white cop, and that the cops basically did nothing.
Covered it up.
And then how his parents kind of, it that dynamic of your parents, like, I was there at one point where you are now, and I learned that the best way to deal with this is to step back and let shit fall where it may. And his whole response is, that's crap. Yeah. And I'm going head first into this with or without your permission, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
While we got 5 minutes left, I'm just going to look over here real quick and see what
the
question was.
It's kind of like that black.
Like black.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that says Patrick saying hi.
Hey.
Say hi to Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
All right.
But it's... I'm interested to see where they go for the second season.
Yeah.
Because I think this first season was really good. They designed it well in terms of an origin story for the two of them.
Oh, there's definitely potential.
It wasn't rushed. It wasn't, you should know who these characters are, so let's just go into the fact of what their powers are.
Yeah.
And the simple fact that even making that small reference to Luke Cage is a big deal, because now they're connected into that universe.
They're connecting to the universe.
Now when I think about what you said earlier, I'm wondering if Marvel is actually trying to build two different universes rather than integrate everybody into one, so that the stories can... Because I will say this, Luke Cage this season was very drama-driven.
Yeah.
There were episodes where I sat there and didn't realize how deep, with the conversations, everything, I was like, damn, they had a fight or nothing in, like, the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And the writing is strong, which is important when you're dealing with a superhero that doesn't have the flash and flair of, like, say, Thor or Spider-Man or the Hulk or anything like that. You know, so...
Yeah, I'm still remember Shades and Cochise.
Oh,
that
Shades.
That whole dynamic right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Shades and Cochise. And, like, oh, that's an interesting term for him.
Yeah.
Another man crush.
Another man crush. I guess I will be checking out Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah,
not the spy novel either. It's Marvel.
And not the Dabney Coleman movie.
Not the Dabney Coleman movie. What E.T. Boy?
Yeah. That's where you know him from.
We got 2.5 minutes.
Trailers.
Let's talk Godzilla real quick.
Rodan, baby!
That's a lot of chicken.
That refers to everything is big.
Yeah, that's where everything that's
right. Rodan.
Oh, Lord.
We got to it.
We got Rodan, we got Mothra,
we got Ghidra.
Which hopefully will finally answer the question, what the fuck a giant Mothra's going to be?
These hands!
Because I really...
Mothra, you have to show them these hands. You have to show them these hands, Mothra.
Godzilla blowing blue flame.
No, Mothra, not to that.
Never mind.
I do want to see what Ghidorah is going to be coming out. Like, wow. I wonder if they're going
to. He's coming out to DMX.
I'm just saying. No, he should come out. He should come out not to DMX, to MF Doom. you got a line in the song. It opens up. Render onto Ghidra what is Ghidra's name. He just dropped that. You're like, whoa!
Oh,
King Ghidorah. Yes. That was more of an awesome moment in terms of watching trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I will be honest. Shazam.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah,
because it just.
I know. We talked about that a little bit. We talked about Venom a little bit, but you know the funny thing is, probably gonna end up seeing it anyway. So it's I don't know.
Billy Batson.
I just started my new job. I can't spend no money.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen,
I don't know, Aquaman.
We're gonna say goodbye for now.
Let me get a raise.
So
here for a raise. So I'm seeing
for maybe. Kirk, Mark, and myself,
you can be a Polynesian lighthouse keeper.
We're gonna sign out of this episode of Beef Wine and Shenanigans.
You got more beads.
No, we're going.
You got more beads.
Good night.